I used to be a Republican. I hope you have forgiven me. It was a long, long time ago. In fact, it was so long ago that when I was a Republican, Dick Cheney was still Saddam Hussein's good friend. Enron was a very profitable corporation, and so was Merrill Lynch and AIG and Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, and nobody would have thought that Freddie and Fannie would be taken over. And also, it was so long ago that Michael Jackson was still black. But now we are in a completely different world. And indeed, one of the most amazing takeovers of the last decade was the takeover of the lunatic fringe of the Republican Party. They first took over the Republican Party, and then they've taken over America. And so this is an incredible turning point. This is a moment of such pressure on all of us to do the right thing, to make sure that all that is at stake is actually fully understood. Because if you look at American history, it has really been a series of incredible progressive breakthroughs, then consolidation, then occasional stagnation. But now are in danger of actually having regression. And of course, there is something incredibly regressive happening just in the last astonishing 2 weeks with the spectacle of Sarah Palin, who actually recently talked in a speech that she gave to soldiers leaving for Iraq in a way that Dick Cheney and George Bush don't talk anymore. Because, you know, they have given up trying to connect 9/11 to our presence in Iraq. But she hasn't heard the news. So when I talk about regression, I mean it literally. There is the danger that we actually have to be refighting those battles. Were there WMD in Iraq? Did we go to Iraq to bring stability to the Middle East? You know, all those things that in some way have been settled. The conventional wisdom has shifted. But the news has not hit Sarah Palin. So the fact that we are at this moment in American history when we are actually engaged in a soap opera at a time when everything around us is crumbling makes me kind of look back at books I've read about the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. You know, the whole idea of fiddling while Rome burns. It's incredibly stunning to go back and look at the way that our news last week was dominated by whether saying that you put a lipstick on a pig is sexist and whether it was a direct affront on the vice presidential nominee. You know, G.K. Chesterton wrote something a few years ago which is incredibly applicable to what is happening right now. He wrote, "If there is one thing worse than the modern weakening of major morals, it is the modern strengthening of minor morals." And this is the kind of faux outrage about things that really do not deserve even mention, let alone outrage. At the very moment when so much has been falling apart. And part of the problem that we are facing has to do with the media. So I would like to start with the media. Because there is a kind of phony sense of objectivity that makes journalists feel that their job ends when they simply present all sides to a story. And I have two teenage daughters, and one of them was the editor of a school paper. And she recently wrote an essay in which she wrote in very idealistic terms about the mission of journalism being to seek the truth, to ferret out the truth. And, you know, that's what they teach us in journalism school. But journalists seem to have forgotten it. And they think that they're really like Pontius Pilate. Their job is, for example, to have a debate on global warming in which, on the one hand, you have someone arguing about the dangers of global warming, and on the other hand, you have someone saying that global warming is a fraud or, as Sarah Palin puts it, not man-made. And then that's it. Your job is done. You wash your hands off. But that's not a journalist's job. In the same way, it's not our job to come back from Iraq or to report on Iraq and call it a mixed bag. You know, Iraq is not a mixed bag. Iraq is the greatest foreign policy disaster in American history. And I was... That's really why when you still hear journalists talk about the war being a mixed bag, when even this week we had more suicide bombs, more deaths, it makes me feel a little bit as though you're going to the doctor and the doctor says to you, you know, this was a bit of a mixed bag of a diagnosis. On the one hand, you have a brain tumor. On the other hand, your acne has cleared. So that's the only way in which you could describe Iraq as a mixed bag. Remember, it's like people who came back from Iraq and said, but you know, there was a football field over there. And that, compared to the 4 million people who've been displaced, compared to the constant killings, compared to the fact that there is still no progress in terms of political reconciliation, that's why I think that Barack Obama made a serious mistake when he went on Bill O'Reilly and said that the search has worked beyond our wildest dreams. That is simply not the case. Go back to what George Bush said about the search. The search was supposed to give Iraq a breathing space during which they could actually bring about political reconciliation. Do you know that the October 1st provincial elections are going to be canceled? No, because the mainstream media are not really covering Iraq seriously anymore. At the Huffington Post, I must say, we have a war wire, and you can stay on top of the latest news on the homepage, because it is incredibly important, and you cannot allow the McCain campaign to act as though Iraq is over as an issue. How many times haven't you heard them say, victory in sight? That's going to seem as triumphalist and absurd as the mission accomplished slogan. So it's very important for us to try and bring it all together for the American people, to connect the dots. And there are a lot of dots to be connected when it comes to what we've done in Iraq and in our foreign policy generally, coming down to the fact that we are still spending $350 million a day on Iraq. Just think of all the things that could be done with that money to help Americans here at home, instead of putting it down this black hole, which includes Blackwater and war profiteering, and America being seen as an occupying force. But the media continue to think that their job is simply to present all sides to a story and move on. So that's where the new media come in. And our job is to really hold their feet to the fire. And while they're suffering from attention deficit disorder, we are suffering mercifully from obsessive compulsive disorder. And that's one of my favorite things about being in the sphere of the new media, that we can stay on a story and stay on a story and stay on a story until it breaks through the static. And I remember before the Huffington Post, when I only had my syndicated column, I would often get a call from my editor saying, oh, you wrote about the failed war on drugs last month. I said, yes, but it still failed, and I have new information, and I want to keep talking about it until we can break through the static. But that is not the way newspapers work. But that is the way it works online. And somehow, sometimes things happen as a result. I mean, and it's not just the Huffington Post. Josh Marshall and Talking Points Memo, they broke the Attorney General scandal by being obsessive, by staying on the story. And they didn't just break it. They stayed on the story after they broke it, until there was a congressional investigation. While the mainstream media very often will break a big story on the front page of the New York Times and then abandon it. And then the blogosphere picks it up and stays with it. So if we have all these issues that we are dealing with the media, with the attention deficit disorder, with the unwillingness to deal with the facts as opposed to allow our fears to dominate our thinking and our decisions, what do we have going for us? because we have a lot going for us in this election. We have, of course, a fantastic candidate. We have a candidate who is truly inspiring, who just by his election demonstrate an incredible breakthrough in American politics and in American life, and who is really going to begin the dismantling of the Bush years, which is going to be the first big step of any new progressive administration. But we also have something else in our favor, which is that the center of American politics has shifted. And so a new president can actually articulate the new center, because we need to stop looking at American politics in this obsolete way of right versus left, because what used to be left-wing positions are now absolutely mainstream. Universal health care, supported by 60-70% of Americans. Doing something about global warming, 60-70% of Americans. Bringing our troops home from Iraq, 60-70% of Americans. Doing something to bring more corporate responsibility on Wall Street, probably 110% of Americans. And yet all these things used to be considered left-wing. I wrote a book a few years ago called Pigs at the Trough. It was supposed to be radical. Now it's actually really missed a lot of the Wall Street absurdities and the greed that has exploded. So all that is something which is going on right now, and which means that we have the majority of the American people on our side. And I say our side because I presume that if you came to this lecture, you basically want to go in the same direction, unless you came to heckle, and I haven't heard any hecklers. So I do feel a little bit like Claire Booth Luce, who was a convert to Catholicism, and she was given an audience with the Pope, and she walked in and she went on and on about Catholicism and what a great religion Catholicism is, and how happy she was to be a Catholic. And at some point, the Pope interrupted her and said, "Madam Booth Luce, you forget, I am already a Catholic. So I don't want you to interrupt me and tell me that you know that you're already Catholics." But my point is that all that is incredibly good news. So what are the two pieces of bad news that we need to be very careful about? One is that the current Sarah Palin soap opera is very distracting. And I actually have urged the Obama campaign, anybody who cares about this election, to really only address Sarah Palin's positions on big issues and nothing else. Because even if we prove every small lie that she and the campaign has said, and they are easily provable, and most of them have already been proven. She did not sell the jet on eBay. She was not against the bridge to nowhere from the beginning. She did ask for millions of earmarks. All that stuff. Even if we prove beyond any shadow of doubt all these small lies, we will have distracted the American people from the big truth. And the big truth is what has happened to the American people over the last 7.5 years. And that's the big truth. What this country has become as a result of the policies of the Bush administration, which John McCain, the new John McCain, is absolutely intending to perpetuate. There is absolutely nothing in what he has said that shows any indication that he would change course. His only main difference with the Bush administration on foreign policy is that he had wanted to fire Don Rumsfeld a little earlier. And in fact, he sounds even more bellicose than George Bush when it comes to how long we're going to stay in Iraq, when it comes to his triumphalist drivel about winning in Iraq, all that stuff. He could actually be worse than George Bush. And the area that we need to take Sarah Palin on, is her views on foreign policy. The fact that she is a blank slate. If you think George Bush was a blank slate, she is blanker. She is a blank slate on which the neocons have started writing the way they did with George Bush. And, you know, Bill Kristol actually wrote that the neocons fell in love with Sarah Palin during a weekly standard cruise in 07. They stopped in Alaska and they met the governor for tea. It was probably cucumber sandwiches and preemptive action on the Lido deck. So then thus began this love affair, and they saw her clearly then as their Eliza Doolittle, that they could fashion their own way. And you could see that when she was interviewed by Charlie Gibson and she was asked about the Bush Doctrine. And she had no clue. But that's not so bad. What is worse is that the Palin Doctrine is completely a neocon doctrine. And that is the way that we need to tackle Sarah Palin. Not on all the other little things, but on all the big issues that she would be perpetuating the worst aspects of the Bush administration. And the final thing, and this is what I want to end on, is really the greatest danger we are facing in November, and that is the power of fear. I believe that every election since 9/11 is going to be ultimately fought on national security, no matter how bad the economy gets. Ultimately, something will happen. Let's hope it's nothing more important or significant than another videotape by Osama bin Laden. But something will happen that will remind the American people that we truly are living in a dangerous time, that there are real threats to America. And at that moment, the McCain advantage on national security, which continues, is going to come to the forefront. And that's why it is imperative that this advantage shrinks between now and November to nothing. Because John McCain would be a disaster in terms of national security. And the American people need to be educated about that. Because as FDR said, fear is truly the only thing we have to fear in November. Because once fear is activated and the lizard brain is activated, people will forget all the rational reasons why they do not want another 4 years of Bush policies. And that's why it is imperative not to let anything stand when it comes to the subtle fear-mongering that has already started. And some of it is not subtle at all. It's like Congressman Steve King going on radio and saying that Al-Qaeda will be dancing in the streets if Barack Obama wins. There should be zero tolerance for statements like that. There should be zero tolerance for somebody going on Fox News and saying that a fist bump is a terrorist sign. There should be zero tolerance for people whispering that Barack Obama is a Muslim. You know, all that is where we need media and each one of us to speak out and say enough. Enough, in fact, in that amazing phrase in Barack Obama's acceptance speech. When he said enough, do you remember? And he allowed himself to be angry, remember? Which is great. Enough, I think, should be the slogan of this campaign for the next 50 years. Enough is really the successor of I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Except it's shorter. It can be chanted at rallies. I hope those of you who go to Albuquerque on Thursday when Barack Obama comes here are going to chant it. Oh, it's in Española? Well, you can chant it there. chant it everywhere. Email your friends, wherever they are. He's in Los Angeles at the moment doing a fundraiser. They've raised $9 million. Not bad, right? Maybe they'll chant it there while Barbara Streisand is singing. Maybe we'll get Will I Am to do another song called Enough. Let's get enterprising. But the message is enough. And we have less than 50 days in which to convince the American people that at this moment, at this turning point in our history, we want to choose another progressive breakthrough rather than regression. Thank you.
effective do you think TV advertising is in this presidential campaign compared to grassroots organizing, voter registration, canvassing, and the internet?
It's kind of interesting about TV advertising because it's one of the few things that has not really changed a lot. The internet has changed so much about this campaign. But if you look at a lot of TV advertising, it still feels like it's from the 50s. And part of the reason is because a lot of the campaign consultants are from the 50s, the 1850s. But one of the other things that's happening with TV advertising is that very often, say, the McCain campaign will do an ad, but not really run it a lot, but just circulate it through the internet. The cable channels will pick on it and start running it. So it's not that it's run a lot, but do you remember the celebrity ad comparing Barack Obama with Paris Hilton? I got a blog from Kathy Hilton complaining. Paris Hilton's mother. But it wasn't that it was played so much, but it was so overplayed on the cable channels that you felt as though you had seen it 100 times.
Right.
So it's one of the, if it is effective, it's partly because of the way it goes viral on the internet, or it is endlessly repeated on cable. And of course, if it is a great ad, we haven't seen any great ads, then it can break through.
What about these other things, grassroots organizing and voter registration? I mean, are they more effective than the TV?
I think any campaign needs to do everything. The Obama campaign has been incredibly good at organizing. It's really absolutely true to say that if it were not for the internet, Obama would not be the Democratic nominee. He was able to be the nominee by raising unprecedented amounts of money on the internet and by organizing and being able to transform what was happening online to the street. I remember being in Chicago and visiting the Obama campaign headquarters, and I arranged to have breakfast with Chris Hughes, who is this 24-year-old who left Facebook to run the Obama campaign's social networking operation. And I arrived at that hotel to meet for breakfast, and I was looking around, and suddenly it dawned on me that this kid sitting at that table, who looked 15, was actually running this entire operation. And he was amazing, and he was telling me how they were that weekend getting 1 million people to knock on doors in Ohio. And that had been in preparation through what they did on Facebook and all those completely new tools. Remember, in 2004, Facebook did not exist in this way, and YouTube was not launched until February 2005. So that gives you an idea of how much has changed in this campaign.
Why do you think the Democratic Party hasn't taken up the issue of fair and accurate elections in any substantive way, given that the last two presidential elections were riddled with foul play, and you can make an argument that Democrats actually won both elections and never ended up in the White House?
There is something really strange about Democrats. There is a sort of a willingness to be reasonable that often goes too far and basically makes them concede far too easily, including the example I gave of Barack Obama and the surge, including not following up on something which everybody accepts, even if people are not going to accept that the Democrats won in 2004, every reasonable person who's observed what happened accepts that there have been election problems with machines, foul play with voters.
Caging lists.
Yes, all that. So all that is pretty accepted now. And so all I can say looking forward is that if the worst happens, I'm a superstitious Greek, so I'm knocking on everything. And John McCain wins. What is incredibly important is that Barack Obama refuses to concede until he knows for sure that there was no foul play. Because It's time to get to the bottom of this. Of course, if either candidate wins by a landslide, then there is no foul play, right? Because foul play operates at the margins. Foul play does not operate with landslides. And that's why I think the most important thing for everybody who cares about this country is to make sure that this election is an Obama landslide.
There is, I think, a kind of a double standard in the media that I've been noticing for years that maybe can be illustrated by the example of you have a teacher in a schoolroom, and the smartest kid in the class gives a presentation, and the teacher gives it a lot of criticism, and then the slow kid in the class gives a presentation, and the school teacher says, "That's very good, Johnny." And so you have a situation where the smart kid, Barack Obama, is being ripped apart, and the dumb kid, Sarah Palin, they're saying, "Oh, gee, isn't that..." I mean, it's a double standard that's absurd. How do you explain it?
That's good. I love that. I think this is great. In fact, John Ridley, an African-American writer who blogs for the Huffington Post, wrote this really great blog along the same lines, where he said, you know, with Barack Obama, it took, how long was it since his 2004 speech, right? It took 4 years of being out there, giving speeches, being tested, and still people saying, well, we don't really know him. With Sarah Palin, it took one speech at the convention, and suddenly, you know, she's ready to be VP. Although, I don't know if you saw Carla Fiorina saying that she wouldn't be ready to run Hewlett-Packard.
But how do you explain the double standards? What's going on in the part of journalists and editors that allows this to happen?
Part of it has to do with the fact that they want it to be a race. You know, it's good for...
They handicap the dumb kid.
Right. They want it to be a race. And in the case of Sarah Palin, let me just make it very clear. Sarah Palin is not dumb. Sarah Palin is uninformed and definitely filled with views that are antediluvian. That is the problem. You know, somebody who, Neanderthal if you prefer, antediluvian, whatever, wrong. Basically, you know, this is the problem with her. She's smart and she connects with people. I think it's very important to be absolutely fair about one's adversaries. She gave a speech which connected with people, and nobody can take that away. And I had friends of mine emailing me things saying, well, somebody wrote it for her. I said, yeah, somebody wrote everybody's speech at the conventions. And then they would say, well, she read it on the teleprompter. Yeah, everybody read it on the teleprompter. Politicians would give a right hand to be able to read the teleprompter the way she's reading it. She can be a sportscaster again. She can do the Today Show. She can do anything. She's just not going to be vice president if this country is really to get it right. So there's a different talents. But what is really important to remember is that her views are completely contrary to what this country believes or needs.
Why should every single person in this audience donate to KSFR during the fund drive?
I would say that that's not good enough. I think every single person in this audience has the obligation to find one more person they know, and they should both donate to KSFR.